back, everybody. Corey is here with me again.
Yay!
I'm always happy to have you back. We're going to be talking about the morning after job, which
I remembered nothing about, and it was really? Very exciting because it's so good, and I was like, I have no memory of ever having watched this. I mean, I obviously have watched this episode before, but it was gone from my brain, so it was like new.
I love that. That is a lot of episodes for me, or like as I'm watching and going, oh yes.
Yeah.
Or I'll remember like a certain beat or a certain scene or something. And it's just all comes flooding back to me. This one I always remember really well because it's the Dead Parker episode. And
yes. Amazing. Okay. Yes. I did remember that when the scene happened.
Yeah. So this episode aired on September 5th, 2010. It was written by Chris Downey, and his last writing credit for this season was The Scheherazade Job, which was like episode 4, and now we're on episode 14. So it's been a while since he's been on.
Yeah.
And it was directed by Jonathan Frakes, who hasn't directed since The Studio Job. This episode was also the fall finale. So this aired in September, and then they didn't come back again until December.
Because the ending is like a little bit cliffhangery for the season arc. So it makes sense that it was the fall finale.
Yeah, it's like setting everything up for the big
confrontation.
Four episodes.
Yeah.
So in this episode, with the information they've gathered in the previous episode, the team are moving closer to Damian Moreau. This time they're taking out a former hockey enforcer turned stock trader.
So the cold open of this episode is like the guy that the leverage team is going to help going in to confront the hockey player stock trader about losing all his money in a fake deal. And the guy freaks out and starts beating the hell out of the guy that the leverage team is helping. And it was very like alarming for me, and that it was like much more direct violence that I think we normally see like that early in the cold open. And I was just like, oh, he's hitting that guy really hard out of nowhere.
Yeah, I almost was like, we never see this much violence on Leverage, which is just patently untrue.
Wait, it's not true, but not like, I mean, usually it's Elliot beating people that badly, and also like in a fight, not just like a poor defenseless dude who lost his retirement getting punched in the face over and over again.
Right. It's somebody who has training, knows they're fighting, is fighting back. And it's not like it's a middle-aged dude who's just sitting there and then gets wailed on by his hero. Which, I mean, you know, Mark Vector is like, when somebody punches me, I see red or whatever. But even, like, in hockey, it's not okay to fight people unless you're both, like, engaged in this fight. Like, you both take off your gloves and go at it.
Right. There's like, very specific cultural rules within hockey around how you fight. And even enforcers will get really mad if people fight dirty.
Yeah.
And, like, it's not.
Yeah, this guy gets a broken orbital bone and 17 stitches from his hero, which is like the most heartbreaking, well, not the most, but a very heartbreaking.
I mean, he did just lose his retirement also.
That also hurts my heart, yes.
Yeah.
And then he like goes to the cops, and this is kind of the first inkling of this future storyline in this episode. The cops said, no victim, no crime.
Right.
No witness.
At the time I was like, that doesn't make sense. That dude obviously just got the shit beat out of him.
Right.
Like there's clearly a crime and a victim. No witness, no crime.
Yeah, I got it wrong.
Because there's obviously a victim, like, and also like the witness is his broken nose. Like it's a weird, and it is, I mean, it's a setup for the later plot about the police, but it's at the time, I was like, that's not how the police work.
Yeah. The first time it's like jarring, you're like, what the fuck is happening in Boston?
Yeah. It's like, it's Baltimore.
Yeah.
Sorry, Baltimore PD.
Yeah, he's not
sorry.
Yeah, that's right. And then the SEC, who he had gone to before, they won't take his complaint because Vector has immunity from the feds. And, you know, Nate tells him, you know what, we're going to make sure this doesn't happen again. We're going to get you your money back. And then, you know, the guy's like, thank you so much. And he leaves. And we have the return of the Italian.
So wait, first I want to say that we find this out later, but just for like the audience, the Vector has immunity because he is has agreed to testify to a grand jury about some people who he helped launder money for, which is important because like he helped launder money for a bunch of mobsters.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then so some.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Italian comes back.
And she's just amused by how sweet and quaint it is that Nate and the team have to find someone to help so they can do their jobs.
Same.
But she just wants him to get back on track because he's running out of time. Like, she gave him 6 months and that deadline is looming. But he says, like, oh, but I called you to meet with me and I want you to give me some information on Vector. And she's like
no, that's not how this works. You're a grown-up professional con man. Con people.
I'm not doing your homework for you, Nathan Ford.
I mean, it's, you know, but he also, at that point, Nate tells us, I mean, tells the Italian, but tells us, info dumps, that one of the bad guys that Vector was helping launder money for was Moreau. So Vector is connected to Moreau. So he is going to use, he's going to save this guy's retirement and also use it as an in for Moreau. It's a twofer.
Yeah. But he doesn't know exactly what this guy has done for Moreau.
Right.
He just knows
right.
They're somehow connected.
There's some connection.
Yeah. So, you know, Nate goes upstairs to start work on this con. But everyone up there is just kind of staring at him, like, why do you meet with the Italian and we don't? And Parker's like, I wonder if she's real or if she's imaginary.
This entire conversation where they're, like, this whole staff meeting that they're having is hysterical to me. There's a point where they're talking about Vector's, like, tendency to hit people really hard. And they're like, Nate's like, I mean, not Nate. Oh my God, I'm so tired right now. Oh my God. And now my brain is, yeah, Elliot. I was like, my brain was only supplying his librarian's name because this episode was like very much a precursor to his librarian's character. Like, he's getting like closer and closer to who he was on the librarians, which is like genius fighter who can recognize people's shoes and figure out like Sherlock Holmesian answers to problems. Anyway, he's like, Elliot's like, I watched his fight tapes, and they're like, Hardison's like, do you just sit at home and like watch?
Sophie says, do you just
oh,
watch
Sophie.
Hockey tape alone at night in your bedroom?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you never know where you have to fight a man.
Fight somebody on the ice.
Which I love, which is kind of foreshadowing to a future episode.
Yes, when he plays hockey. Yeah, but the fact that he's like, you never know where you need to fight somebody on the ice. It's just this like, that's sure, checks out.
Sure, Elliot.
Why not?
I mean, sure. 2010, I don't think YouTube was quite as big as it is now. But
right.
Like, if you go to YouTube and you look up, like, hockey fights,
oh yeah,
there are tons of videos with tons of views. So, like,
yeah, so it's not super abnormal. Like, he's a guy who hits people for a living.
Yeah.
It's not. It's a fight. It's a sport about hitting people. I mean, arguably it's not, but, like, we know that it is. So, yeah. It's totally a reasonable thing that he does with his life. Anyway, that cracked me up.
Because I feel like we've talked before, like, Elliot sleeps 3 hours a night, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember if that's something that we were convinced of or if he actually says it.
I think he said that.
I think he does.
But I think also we were like, he must because he, like, gardens and
makes his own organic food.
And yeah.
Yeah. When Hardison's running this, he does some background info on Vector, and I thought it sounded a little weird, so I did some research. Recently, I've gotten very into men's hockey.
Yeah, no, I'm a fan. You know, I'm a big hockey fan.
Yeah, which for most people that I tell, I feel like I'm coming out to them because they're like surprised and disappointed in me, which is not how people should act when you come out to them. But
right, or also admit that you like hockey. I got into hockey because my husband's family is really into it, but I also think that many people who are big fans of Check Please, which we are both big comic Check Please, you guys should buy it if you haven't already, listeners, yes. Become fans of men's hockey because they're hoping that, like, beautiful Canadian men will smooch other men. And that does not really happen.
Or that we can have a family, like, on Check Please. Yeah. Just, like, yeah. I just want to be with all those people. That was definitely, like, my intro. And then I listened to this other podcast that I love called You Can't Do That. And they have a wonderful fandom. Some of whom have listened to this podcast. So if you're listening, oh, I love you. So I, like, looked up some stats to kind of compare Vectors to them. Yeah. So Hardison says he spent over 3,000 minutes in the penalty box, and that's a pretty high number. It would put him at like number 8.
Okay.
For most time in the penalty box in like the history of hockey. But he says his number of assists and goals, like his number of assists was like 6 and his goals were 2. And that's terrible. So I looked at the stats of the guy who was ranked number 10 for most time in the penalty box, Rick Toshit, I think that's how you say his name.
Okay.
He had 512 assists and 440 goals in his
In his career, right.
So very sad.
So I don't know. I mean, just because of like the red and white jersey, that sweater that Vector wears, reminded me of my darling beloved Red Wings. There's a guy on the Red Wings, I don't think he's playing anymore, although his little brother is. I'm not up on current hockey because we don't have cable, but Todd Bertuzzi played for the Wings for years and was an enforcer and was like a dirty player who like broke a dude's spine one time. Like he was don't send me hate tweets about how Todd Bertuzzi's a good guy. He's not, and he shouldn't have been playing for the Wings for a long time. And he was like a shady fighter. That's what that reminded me of. But also he was phenomenal at scoring goals or he would not have continued to play for the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah.
25 time Stanley Cup finalists, right? He was really good at playing hockey, not just hitting people.
Mm-hmm. You have to be good at more than
or one. Or when he broke a dude's spine, they would have been like, okay, bye. Like,
you go to jail.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you can score two, you get to stay forever.
It was a dirty hit. Anyway, it's long, but whatever. So that's what that reminded me of, is those guys who like, stats are bad.
That's bad. And I don't know if that's maybe his time in hockey was shorter, or if like the writers, like Chris Downey, just really doesn't know what hockey stats should look like.
About hockey, yeah.
So in the commentary, none of them were really talking like they're big hockey fans,
right?
Little bits, but I didn't get the feeling that any of them were like huge hockey nerds, which is fine, just fine. So then Hardison goes on to say that after he was done with his pro life, his pro hockey life, he threw to the stock market and he made a fortune in stock trading. And Nate's like, okay, that's the myth. Tell us what the real deal is. And the truth is he's a huckster who made a fortune swindling his hockey fans. And then he started laundering money for other world figures that he met during his career. And now he's, like you were saying earlier, he's turned state's evidence against some of those mob clients for a grand jury. That's meeting, like, today in, like, a couple hours.
Yeah.
So tomorrow.
What I really, really liked about this episode was that they were on a really tight schedule, mm-hmm. and they had to turn it around, and there was no room for error. Like, the
error.
Whole thing like, had to... And yeah, and it was like error upon error upon error. Like it, but, you know, just that usually we see them, like, do a setup, and we get, like, a montage of them, like, figuring out... No, this was like, well, you got about 12 hours, so figure it out.
Here we go. Let's go to the airport. And speaking of the airport, part one is to meet him at the airport, which is in the same conference center or convention center as last week or last episode. They were in the same convention center that was pretending to be an airport, which is pretty good for doubling.
Yeah.
And he's being met there by his FBI handler. And, we find out that Parker gets to be the carrot because Sophie's going to play the stick. And she's like, do you remember the last time I was the carrot? I stabbed
somebody.
And it's like, he'll be fine.
You're fine. Don't stab a guy.
But then to make, you know, matters worse or more stressful, they see that his FBI handler is Agent McSweeten.
McSweetens. I love him.
Who we haven't seen since the fairy godparents job.
He is a marshmallow.
He is a stupid marshmallow.
A dumb, dumb marshmallow. He's not good at being an FBI agent.
He's not.
For sure.
Thank
He's
God for
bad
the
at his job. For sure.
He's so malleable, though.
He's not good at his job. But he's a kind human being.
He deserves good things.
He deserves good things, probably not in federal law enforcement.
No, but I would like to make this point. In this show, usually nice people have horrible things happen to them. So
that's
I love
true.
That he is like the complete polar opposite.
Yeah.
Because he's a nice person, good things happen to him.
That's true.
And I love that. Okay.
But he does already think that Parker is an FBI agent.
Yeah.
So they need to get rid of him because she can't meet up with him and pretend that... Anyway, it's a problem.
So they fake a call to the FBI field office saying that Vector has shown up, but nobody met him at his gate because he's at a different gate.
And if no one shows him 5 minutes, he's going to just leave the airport by himself. Yeah. Which, like, I mean... I guess, like, Vector's not a good guy who makes good life choices, but also we've seen that, like, we will see shortly that, like, several people are trying to kill him at any given moment, and it seems unlikely that he would actually have ever left the airport by himself. Like,
yeah.
He's not that dumb. Vector, no. Actually, I thought was played really well. I don't know who played him. I don't know that actor, but,
Yeah, I've never seen anything else.
I think that, like, bit actors who are not well known who are in parts like this where, like, the character is obviously, like, a super villain, tend to, like, way overplay it and not have any, like, nuance in the way that they play the guy, like Nate putting on a bit. But, like, that's how the actor playing the bad guy in Leverage sometimes is, like, not in this, if they're not, you know, somebody amazing. This guy, who I've never heard of, I just felt like had a lot of nuance to the way that he played this character. Like, he wasn't over-the-top smarmy, but he was still smarmy. Like,
yeah.
He had, like...
When he picks up Parker in a minute...
Yeah.
You know, she kind of picks him up, too, but... It feels really natural. Just like, oh, this is a charming guy who was a, you know, a former hockey player. Like, oh my gosh. So, yeah, no, I agree. He goes through so many different emotions in ways that do feel kind of, like, really authentic.
Yeah. But anyway, the FBI field office calls McSweetens and is like, get your ass over there and, you know, get to the right gate and pick him up. So McSweetens hauls us over to the wrong gate. Meanwhile,
saying excuse me the whole time. Excuse me, excuse me.
You know, he's Canadian. So Parker goes, picks up Vector.
Yeah. Well, first,
picks up Vector.
They're talking about, like, why would Vector talk to them if he's immune? And right. And Nate's like, we have to make him think he's done something that will undo his immunity. Something so bad that he's got to make a new deal. And because it's a new deal, he has to offer something bigger. So he has to offer Moreau. Which is, like, something has to be huge for him to be willing
give up Damien Moreau, who is, like, the most dangerous. I mean, like, the whole point of their crusade to find Moreau is that Moreau is, like, the baddest of the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not going to give him up just for, like, federal witness protection. Like, there has to be a really good reason.
Right. So they have to figure out his weaknesses, which are partying and violence.
Yeah.
And then they have to also figure out who he calls when he's in trouble. And it's, sadly, not Ghostbusters.
Thank you. This Parker, like, sings the Ghostbusters theme in the funniest little voice. And it's super cute. And everybody's like, again? Which I just want to see the other times that she's done this exact same bit. She's like, I like this bit. It's a good bit. I'm just going to do it.
So you think when it says again, he's referencing the fact that she sings the Ghostbusters theme a lot?
That's
I was like, because earlier she's like, is she even real? Is she invisible? But like, she's like, an adult?
Yes, but like, Nate goes, who are you going to call? And she goes, Ghostbusters. And she's so pleased with herself. And they're like, again? And I truly thought that she just does that every time someone says who you're going to call. And they're all just like, it was super cute. It's true. It was super cute. And she's just like, she's so pleased with herself. She's grinning from ear to ear. Oh, crack me up.
It's like in the first Avengers movie when Captain, like, Steve Rogers is like, oh, I got that reference.
Yeah.
She's just like, well, I understood a human thing.
Yeah. Am I doing the jokes right? And they're like, no. So, anyway, it's not Ghostbusters. It's his lawyer.
Right. And his name is Daniel Firestone. Yes. And this is our first let's go steal something in this episode. Let's go steal his lawyer. So Sophie rushes up and pretends that she's a banker who's, like, gotten in bad with some Japanese bank, and she needs him to go to Japan to save her butt. And then she just records the things that she wants him to say. She kind of, like, manipulates him into saying what they need. And then she just, like, turns around and, like, plays the tape recorder.
This is a little pocket recorder. She just plays it. It's weird.
I mean, it's so that we know.
Right.
But it's still very unnatural that she would.
Yeah, it's not.
She's like Kevin McAllister with a talk boy. Just like.
Yeah, it's not good conning. No, yeah. No. It's exactly Kevin McAllister with a talk boy. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. So, you know, Nate says he likes to party, so we're going to throw him a party. And then we see Vector get off the plane, or not get off the plane, but like come out into the airport, and he bumps into this dude with like gray hair and a guitar case, and he's like, hey, watch it, buddy, which is a random thing to have on a television show if that's not going to come back.
Uh-huh.
So hint that's going to come back.
Uh-huh.
And Nate reminds Parker not to stab him. No stabbing.
She walks away like, no stabbing. It's so good. So she...
And then the second that she starts talking to him, she's perfect.
Yeah, so she bumps into him and, you know, is talking about, oh, they lost my luggage. And he's immediately like this hot blonde girl. Like, it's a weird transition because... he's like, get out of my way, you know, and she's like, they lost my leg, and he's like, oh, well, how far are you going? Like, he just, like, the minute that a beautiful blonde is in front of him, he's like, pivots completely to like, let me try to seduce you. I was annoyed 30 seconds ago.
But, well, that reminds me, we just watched the Hustle.
Yes. Hustlers? Hustlers?
No, the Hustle.
Okay.
Hustlers later. I've watched all movies with that recently.
Yeah. Okay.
The Anne Hathaway Rebel Wilson one.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And when they're like, they start working together, Anne Hathaway's character, I'm not going to try her to do her ridiculous accent, but she's like, what is one thing, like the one way to get a man? And it's that they all want to be a hero.
Mm.
So like, that's like very much this. You know, she's just this random person, but oh no, now she's a damsel in distress.
Right.
And oh, she knows who I am. Oh, okay.
Right, because she's like, you look familiar. Oh yeah, you're Mark Vector. I saw a game once where you hit a guy so hard his helmet split. And once again, he like drops the extremely important information later of, when I hit someone, when somebody hits me, I see red.
Yeah. Isn't it nice to have a catchphrase that's also your Achilles heel?
It's weird to have your catchphrase be that I cannot physically stop myself from hitting people.
Yeah, like
that's a weird identity to have. Mm-hmm. But you know, we're all just humans.
This unique tapestry of life.
In fairness, he probably has like some pretty extreme brain trauma from getting hit all the time, like probably some complex brain injury stuff going on, so like he may just not like some people with traumatic brain injuries just like have a lot of trouble with impulse control, so he may truly, thanks to hockey, not be able to stop himself from
hitting. And that would also explain like the heavy drinking and the partying.
Yeah,
I mean, he could also just be an asshole. But he does.
Well, I mean, I think he's an asshole who may also have traumatic brain injury, but I don't think that we should say that, like, the many asshole things that he does, because, like, the guy he beats up at the beginning, that's not, he doesn't, like, lose his temper with that guy. He just looks at him and is like, I'm going to beat you up now because I don't want you to call the SEC anymore.
Like, yeah, it's like, it's cold and calculating. It's not, like,
Yeah.
Well, that scene is...
So anyway, he wants to take, so Parker's like, like recognizes him and is excited and, tells him that he asked her for a drink and she says that her apartment is right next to the bar. So she takes him to Nate's bar.
Yeah.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
And he's immediately super drunk, but like the next time we see him.
Extremely drunk.
He's calling her the wrong name. And then she's kind of like out of character at this point because this is boring now.
He's just drunk, yeah.
And Sophie, she does have to coach her a little as they're upstairs, like transforming Nate's apartment into somewhere this character Alice would live.
Yeah.
So there's flowers and candles and like the screensaver on the TVs is a fish tank. And Nate's upstairs. And I want to know what you think about this, because Nate's bedroom is covered in pictures of praying mantises.
I've not noticed that. And I'm really going to have to rewatch it.
It's above the bed. And then, like, on the opposite wall, there's, like, more photographs of mantises.
That's such a weird choice for the scene set decorator.
It is. And in the commentary, like, John Rogers is like, why are there all these things? Which I don't think I would have noticed otherwise.
Right.
So this wasn't something that, like...
John Rogers was like, we got to do this with the mantises.
And
this is, like, who Nate is a man who loves praying mantises.
I don't know, like, that's so weird, because he's switching things out, like, he takes the drawing that his son had done, and he replaces it with his photograph that's supposed to be, like, I guess, young Alice, or Parker's character, and, but then I was like, okay, well, maybe it's a weird metaphor, and these are like her art on the wall, like what this character would have. And right. then I'm like, what does that say about Alice? Like, is she gonna bite his head off?
Yeah, well, I mean,
after they like, it's kind of what happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So anyway, Sophie's like, you need to flirt with him or try, you know, she says you are supposed to be the like sexy tomboy, so like punch his arm. So Parker punches him and he like is really into it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, is that all you got? Punch me again. So she punches him harder, which is like, I was worried at this point because I couldn't remember what happened in the episode that she was going to like blow her cover because he was going to get mad that she was punching him. But instead he was like, oh yeah, you like it rough. Like, let's go do this. And she's like, yeah, let's go upstairs to my apartment. And it's, but he like can't open a door. He's so drunk.
Yeah. It's gross.
Like, it's gross. It's gross.
Tell them that's drunk.
Don't, like, yeah.
Tell them the cab mm-hmm. or drive
don't
them
do it. Like, yeah, don't do it.
And then the next thing he knows, he wakes up the next morning and Parker, well, Alice is dead in the bed next to him. And mm-hmm. he's got these scratches on his face. And we get a flashback of Parker drugging him. Because we saw Nate, when he was switching everything out, put something in one of the empty tumblers.
Yeah.
On the bedside table or on the dresser.
It was a roofie, which was not needed because that man would have passed out in 3.5 seconds anyway. But, true. You know, true. I don't feel bad for him for the hangover, the roofie hangover he was going to have.
No.
Because
and in fact, he bounced back much sooner than yeah. he should have. Maybe I would have liked him to, like, be running to the bathroom every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Just laying on the couch, unable to move.
Yeah. But so he did, yeah. he does, oh, we see Parker, like, get up and, you know, or put on, grab her bag o' tricks and put on her makeup and she puts on a skin patch. Is she putting it on over her pulse point?
I think so. We only see her put one on her wrist.
Yeah.
But he also checks her neck, her throat okay. for a pulse, so she must have put one there as well.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't find one. And so he's like freaking
she's
out.
She's like gray. She's got blue lipstick on. Like,
yeah.
She's, you know, she's and dead.
It looks like bruising around her
yeah.
neck.
Yeah.
So he, you know, calls, not Ghostbusters, he calls Firestone.
Yeah.
But luckily, Hardison has rerouted the call, and he's using a soundboard that he's made from the clips that Sophie got and refers Vector to another lawyer.
And Elliot is trying really hard to help with that process, and he's not being helpful. He's, like, standing over Hardison and, like, trying to tell him when to check the buttons, and Hardison is like, this is my job. Go punch somebody.
I wrote this program. I can do this. Yeah. Don't worry. And he's like, all right. And then they start arguing about what the con is called.
Yes.
He's like, oh, Nate, the dead one night stand woman. Oh, it's called the Vegas Ticket Ball.
And then it pans over to Sophie and Nate who are talking about it. And Sophie's like, it's the ham sandwich.
The Reuben.
Okay.
And they're waiting downstairs. And at first I was like, man, the bar is dead. There's no one here. And then I was like, it's first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Of course it's dead. Yeah, it's the bar. So it's supposed to be open in the morning. And they're talking and they need to get him to trust this new lawyer so that when Sophie, as the prosecutor, comes in to make the deal with Vector in exchange for information about Moreau, like, he'll trust the lawyer enough to do it. And to kind of sell her story, she needs the original immunity agreement so she can like read from it and
knows what's happening. Yeah.
And so the boys have to get that from the courthouse. And Hardison has made them cop identities that are so good that he even got a police cruiser. And this is another one where, like, Elliot, like, he's like, oh, I did this thing. And Elliot's like, oh, you're so great. Maybe we can get a fire truck next time. a little bit.
Which is hilarious because then Elliot is like extremely into his persona and like makes them pull over to take cop calls. Like he's super into it. And Hardison's like, my dude, we are undercover to get some paperwork.
It's like, we're in the middle of three things right now.
We have a job that's, we have to finish in like an hour. Because at this point, it is the morning of the grand jury.
Mm-hmm. The grand jury is currently happening.
Is currently happening.
Yeah.
And so they show up at the courthouse, and the prosecutor for the grand jury, actual prosecutor for the grand jury, is extremely concerned about where Vector is. And is like, what'd you guys do with Vector? Where is Vector? What's happening? And they're like, we need the paperwork. They do this whole, like, song and dance about needing extra paperwork, so she hands them the whole file and is like, get out of here, but wait, I need you to take a witness with you, a grand jury witness with you, to drop him off at the precinct.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is a terrible idea. Yeah, we should not do this. So he's in the back, this dude is in the back of the police cruiser, and he's like, I really need some water. Someone told me I was going to need some water. Can you turn the AC on? Like, he's very ill.
I'm going to throw up.
I'm going to vomit. And they're, like, bickering like an old married couple. And about, you know, why Hardison always has to go way overboard on cons. And, like, this is what happens. And they're both like, shut up and don't puke in the car, dude.
Very don't make me come back there.
Yeah. Yes, they're extremely like your grouchy dads.
Yeah. And if you don't be quiet, you're going to be in trouble when we get home. I really like kind of the scene that's intercut with this, with Nate waiting to go up to meet Vector, and he's softening him up by making him freak out more before he shows up. And he says that he learned it from Sophie. And then she says that this whole kind of scenario reminds her of the old times when they were against each other. And then he says he prefers when they work together.
Yeah.
It's really cute. They have a, they have like two really like sweet moments where they're really learning to like talk about how they trust and admire each other. Because, you know, she says, are you worried? And he says, about you? Never. And then she like fixes his tie and it's very much
sweet con babies having trouble with their feelings.
Yes.
I know.
Okay, we've come a long way.
They're very bad at being in love with each other. In like adult ways, like adults. It's very sweet. So Sophie calls Elliot and Hardison and is like, I need the file. Like, we are supposed to be at the grand jury right now. Like, what is happening? You have to get me this file. And they're like, yeah. And then over the police cruiser, there's a call about, like, a guy with a weapon. And Elliot's like, we have to pull over. What if there's kids?
He just is, like, yelling, there could be kids there.
There could be kids there.
He turns the car wheel.
He does. And they get there. And there's a domestic dispute where, like, a dude is yelling at his wife. And his wife is threatening him with a baseball bat. And Elliot, like, extreme dads them. And it's like, give me the baseball bat and sit down in the bumper and think about what you've done. And the husband who is yelling, the wife thinks that the husband had sex with the wife's sister, which apparently there's pictures. I don't know. Anyway, it's a subplot. But
he's like, look at the pictures. And they're like,
no, I'm not going to. Anyway, the husband gets mad at Elliot for being mean to his wife. So then they start like trying to beat up Hardison and Elliot. And it is extremely slapstick and like a nice little moment of like ridiculousness in the middle of the episode. But when they get it sorted out and go back to the police car, they've lost their witness.
They've gained a baseball bat though.
They've gained a baseball bat, which is important later. But they've lost the witness.
Which is also important. They should have that witness.
They need him.
And this witness has Cinderella'd out of here because he left a shoe behind.
Yeah. He's gone. So they have to find him.
Yeah. And they do. They find him pretty quickly.
And he's like, this is what I'm going to tell the grand jury. This is what I was testifying about dirty cops. And they're like, no, the case is about money laundering. And he's like, yeah, money laundering for dirty cops. And they're like, oh, fuck. There's more to this than we thought there was.
My question, because we do come back to this victim later. Where is he in the meantime?
That's a really good question, because there's a lot of action where, like, no one is watching him.
Yeah. Where'd he go?
I don't know. It's unclear. Anyway, the fact that he has given them this information that the money laundering was for dirty cops is a super important piece of the puzzle that they did not have before. So, they have extremely accidentally stumbled upon this information by getting, like, being too good at playing cops and getting a witness that they're supposed to drive home, and then beating up a witness to dirty cops, who then is like, no, you can't be like, I'm already dirty cops is my thing.
We're not even cops.
The last episode that I did was the one with, like, the bank, with the like, guys who were trying to steal the stuff out of the evidence locker. It was Nate's dad.
Yes, the three-card Monty job.
And they, like, got a really, really, really crucial piece of information, like, from standing around at the coffee stand. And so this is very similar, like, somebody drops a piece of information that they need to solve the puzzle, like, just because they happen to be standing there.
Yeah. I love that. I love things like that.
Not detective work. I mean, detective work in that they were in the right place at the right time. But, look. So now they know there's dirty cops involved. Also, they have this witness that they have to do something with. Don't know what.
And then a further wrench in the plan is that McSweeten is not the worst at his job, and he has tracked down improvements, and he is showing up at McRory's.
Yeah.
So they need to find a way to keep him from finding Vector until they're ready. So who can they get to distract him? Parker.
Parker, who's like, I'm literally playing dead right now. And Nate's like, it's fine. We'll just keep him out of the bedroom. He won't see that the body's gone.
Yeah. Who wants to come look at a dead body more than once? Not I. So Parker's like, well, how am I going to get out? Like, how am I going to get down?
And Nate pulls, like, a repelling artist out of his closet. And Parker's like, why do you have this? And he's like, you have one of these in your closet.
Like, you don't have just one like, in your closet.
Yeah. She's like, yeah, fair point. That's fine.
And then in that moment, I feel like Parker and Nate got closer.
They did. No, I feel like that's true. She Parkers herself out of the bedroom to go meet up with McSweeten's and convince him to not go into the room, basically.
Yeah, so she just, like, shows up, and she still has some of her makeup on from being dead. Like, her lips are still blue, and she tells him that she's been deep undercover, and that's why he hasn't been able to locate her, and he's like, oh, your lips? And she's like, oh, it's probably because it's cold in Russia. What? And so she's like, oh, let's go talk outside, but then she gets a call from her informant, Yuri, and making him go outside means that Nate can see him from his window, and he pulls Vector over and he's like, hey, do you know that dude? Who's that? I saw him the other day. And Vector's like, oh, that's my FBI handler. I don't want him to find me right now because there's a dead woman upstairs.
Right.
So they're like, okay, we can't leave the apartment. So you have to stay here. And then he also tells him, like, stay away from the windows. We don't want anybody to see you.
Right.
And then he kind of gets, like, a vibe. You can see him, like, look out at the building opposite. And he's like, okay, something's weird. But he kind of, like, disregards it. So I'm like, Nate Ford has, like, the gut instinct of, like, no one else. I don't know why he's like, I'll worry about it later.
Totally fine.
No, you have a sixth sense. For real, dude.
Yeah.
We already talked about their call, the cops thing.
So I don't remember what if it. So at some point, Elliot and Hardison go back to the bar, and Elliot Sherlock Holmes is the bar patrons, but I don't remember if that's like before or after the window explodes.
That is in a little bit. So we talked about the whole scene with the where they answer the call and then chase the witness, and those happen in between these scenes.
Okay.
So Nate's still working on getting Vector to confess, and he kind of almost badgers him into it.
He's yes.
Surprise. Yeah. Imagine all this stuff.
Yeah.
And he says again, someone punches me, I see red. It's not my fault. Which really sounds like he's like, I have a doctor's note for these management issues.
Sometimes I just kill people.
It's not my fault.
Yeah.
Why should I, be held responsible for my actions? And Nate says he's got a friend in the U.S. attorney's office that he's going to call to come help.
Yeah.
Oh, and we find out where Taggart is. Because Parker and McSweeten are kind of walking around the ground floor, talking about stuff. And Taggart is watching Krav Maga at Quantico this week. And he's worried. He knows that he screwed up picking up Vector, and he's like, it's going to be back to Kansas for me.
Oh.
And I think, I 100% think that, Parker thinks that he's sweet, but I think Parker's also attracted to McSweeten.
Oh, yeah.
She does, weird physical things. She grabs his tie at one point, which is also, Parker doesn't know how you distract a person.
Right, right.
But she's very, physical towards
him. Yeah.
But at this point, when they're in the back room, this is when the guys show back up and they have the agreement for Sophie, and she's annoyed, and Elliot, they give her the file folder, but Elliot's something feels off, something's weird, and she brushes it off. So this is the second time someone's had someone who has a very
guts. Yeah. Somebody who's really, really good at having a gut feeling about bad situations.
Yeah.
They have what is it in Monster of the Week? Where you roll to read a bad situation and you add cool or whatever. They have extremely good, high cool or whatever it is that you add. So we were talking about brushing off having a gut instinct about something, which is a bad idea in the leverage. Especially if it's Elliot or
Nate. Yeah. And so Sophie goes upstairs and she puts on her U.S. attorney glasses, and she's very serious. And she proves her her credibility by showing the immunity agreement and reading excerpts from it and saying, to get this new crime covered up that's at least manslaughter, you're going to have to give up Moreau. And she's like, yeah, you thought we didn't know about him. It's playtime is over. There's a dead girl upstairs and you need to play a ball, which goes against the playtime being over. So,
yeah, I don't know. It's not a great metaphor, but yeah.
Okay. I was just saying that Vector doesn't want to be the next OJ. So he's
Yeah.
And so he says he knows about Moreau's money because Moreau parked some of it in his fund, and he knows everything. He knows routing numbers, country codes, account numbers, and he's got it all encrypted, and only he, Vector, has the code.
Right.
And then he says, Vector helped fund that nightclub bombing in Cyprus last month. Is this information worth the life of an ice bunny who knew what she was getting into?
Right. And you're I feel fine about anything that happens to this.
Right. I hope you die.
Yeah.
After you give us the information we need.
Yeah.
Gross. And Hardison and Elliot, they're their job's done right now. So they're just hanging out.
Right. At a bar.
I don't even know what they're doing. They're quietly to each other. Oh my gosh, did you see that? Until some plainclothes cops come into the bar, and Elliot says it's a little early for cops in a bar. And I, like, as he says, as a guy dressed as a cop in a bar.
Right.
And so they're obviously, they're here to kill Vector. And he knows they're cops because of their shoes.
Right, which is, like, extremely what his character on Librarians, like, who's a genius who likes to punch people in bars, like, literally. Anyway, I was like, oh, they're just setting up here for the next thing for Christian Kane. Anyway, so he calls Nate on comms and is like, I think there's a bunch of dirty cops here to kill Vector.
And so Nate's like, okay, yeah, my gut, like, something is off here.
Yeah.
Which, on the DVD, there's, like, the cut where they went to commercial, and then they come back, and they don't do this very often. And I was in the kitchen when it happened, but they, like, repeated the last couple lines.
Yes, I noticed that.
I was like, is something wrong with my DVD?
Yeah.
Is it skipping?
I was like, this is super weird.
Yeah. So Parker takes McSweetin to go search the lofts. Upstairs, floor by floor, on the elevator, and Hardison goes to trap them in the elevator so they don't get very far.
And Parker crawls up through the top and is like, lift me up, I'll give you a boost. And then she gets up to the top and she's like, okay, bye.
You're real sweet. Bye.
Bye, and leaves. And he's trying to ask her out for a drink, and she's literally disappeared. Like,
it's very much writing in someone's yearbook. You're like, see, sweet.
Yeah.
And so Nate brings Vector back over to the window to kind of like have a private confab and asks him if Moreau knows that he has all this information on him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know. And he's like, well, I think he does now. And then a snipe opens up on them. Like,
The window just like starts to explode with bullets.
Yeah.
So they dive. They take the dive.
They dive down, and then it's obviously a stunt person, but Sophie, like, ninja rolls, like, really hard into this huge desk. I'm like, why did you roll that fast? Ow! And in the chaos, Nate sees Vector's phone, and we get a flashback of the airport when Vector, like, runs into that other guy, and then we see that guy cloning his phone so that he can track him. He's a I want to talk about this sniper really quick.
Okay.
Who we know nothing about. He never speaks or anything.
Right.
But, like, the John Rogers, Chris Downey headcanon for this character is that he is married to the assassin from the Reunion Jab episode.
Aww.
And he's not a good assassin. He just got into this line of work through his wife.
He does not manage to kill anybody in this assassination attempt. Nate's like, okay, I'm dealing with this sniper situation. And Ellie's like, I'm going to go take care of it. And Hardison's like, oh my God, why?
No, you've jumped ahead an entire fight.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes, I missed the fighting. Yes.
So the next one is Hardison's like, we gotta hurry up. So Elliot smashes a cop's head into the bar.
Oh, yes.
And it's great because the bar is open and there are a bunch of people, but they only look mildly horrified that cops are beating up each other. Like, they're used to this. Maybe
a lot of shit happens at that bar. If you hang out at that bar all the time, like,
that's true. Like, most of these people were probably there when the last time Sterling showed up and Elliot showed up. So, you know.
A lot of stuff happens at that bar.
Yeah. And then, so he heads to the back room and they have this totally Batman fight. Hardison earlier went to the breaker room to shut down the elevator for Parker. And so he's in there and Elliot just like, Hardison, dark. And all the lights go out, and all the cops come in, and they're, like, using their phones and flashlights. And so it's, like, dark, and then you get this, like, neat first-person perspective as they're, like, shining the light around in the dark. And, like, Elliot shows up and, like, punches a guy, and the next person, and he headbutts a guy. And he just takes him out, and then like the last guy drops. The last guy one looks like Kevin Spacey, so I was really happy when I got punched out.
Yeah.
And his flashlight is like swinging around, and it makes this really cool light effect. And then Elliot steps on his glasses, which is the ultimate.
Because
when you're
destroyed,
you still won't be able to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Parker McSweet are in the elevator. Then the cop who had his head smashed into the bar surprises Hardison in the breaker room, and Hardison gets to beat him up with the baseball bat.
Yeah, the important later baseball bat.
Yeah. It's Chekhov's gun. You know, if you
introduce
it in one scene, it's got to go off by the end.
Yeah.
And then they try to check in with Nate, but there's like feedback because they're still being shot up upstairs. So then, and in my notes, I wrote, Elliot rushes in.
Elliot rushes in.
I knew we would probably talk about Taz at some
point. Taz at some point, yeah. It's likely. So while Elliot is rushing in to go stop the sniper with his bare hands, Hardison is like, okay, buddy, and just pulls out his phone and brings up like an app where he's like connected to all the buildings in the areas.
Like,
yeah, of course, all the buildings that surround the bar, he's like connected to their alarm systems, and he just sets off the fire alarm so the sprinklers go off. And the guy is like, and like, yeah, the spike sniper's like, whatever, and packs up his gun and leaves in his guitar case. Bye.
I know, like, he had that guitar case in the airport when he bumped into Vector. So he got the guitar case through customs.
With an assault rifle in it.
Yeah.
A fully automated assault rifle.
Yeah, in 2010.
I don't know.
You know.
Maybe it was a guitar. Maybe there is a guitar. Anyway.
Yeah.
And
Elliot knows a little bit more about Moreau's MO than you'd think. But he's like, oh, that's how Moreau does it. With like, cleaning up all
no
the
shell casings.
So you're like, hmm. And Vector at this point is like, oh, F this. Like, I'm not going to rat out Moreau. Like, the deal's off.
I'm going to get killed. It's fine. I'm going to court.
Yeah, I'm going straight to court. And I'm going to be safe. Like, okay. The immunity is like that you won't be charged with crimes. It's not, we're going to keep you safe. I guess they could put him in prison. So he like runs out of the apartment and he meets up with McSweeten, who's finally getting off the elevator. Just like, here's another person right in McSweeten's lap. And he demands to be taken to the courthouse. So they've lost him. And so he's like, there's no point in trying to stop him. And he doesn't even have the codes. Like, he wouldn't give them to us. But Nate's like, oh no, we do have the codes. And he tells Elliot and Hardison to get to the courthouse as soon as possible, which they can do because they have cop car. And they
have cop car.
And
which Elliot is driving this time.
He's like, I'm going to drive. And Parker has to take care of the witness who's been where?
No one knows. In a closet. Yeah, like having a drink. No one knows.
Having a drink, not freaked out by the dirty cops who've just come in. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. No one knows.
Yeah. Then, so Nate tells Sophie to call the feds. Oh, no, she... Oh, to pick up the cops, yeah. So Nate told Sophie to call the feds to come pick up the dirty cops because the Boston Police Department to protect their own and they need to actually see justice.
Yeah.
I'm going to go see the Italian. But first, we get to go to the courthouse where Victor is totally surprised to see his lawyer where he's supposed to be.
Because he thinks his lawyer is in Japan.
And he's like, you have to stop drinking.
He's like, my bud. Just answer their questions. Everything's going to be fine. But when Vector gets on the stand, like, I don't know that much about grand jury trials, but I'm confused because his lawyer's not allowed to be in there with him. I mean, I assume because he's his lawyer, but there's just, like, the dude he beat up at the very beginning and Parker are both there as, like, part of the public?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that was weird, but, like, important to the story. because yeah. he sees Parker as he's trying to answer these questions, and he just melts down because this is the woman he killed.
This girl's dead, yeah.
And
full freak out.
We get a flashback of that meeting as if we'd have forgotten.
I've forgotten. So he has a freak out, and the judges like take him out of the courtroom. So Hardison and Elliot are there in cop uniforms to try to take him out. And they are like, hey, Moreau wants to see you. And he pulls a gun out of, like, in a scuffle, he pulls a gun out of Elliot's thigh holster and threatens to shoot up the courthouse with it. And Parker tases him.
Of course.
At which point his lawyer comes in and is like, what happened here? You were fine like 5 minutes ago. And Parker walks away and is like, I'm really starting to like to tase people. Is that okay? And they're like, no, we're taking your taser away.
He like takes the taser. So good.
But so now Vector cannot get immunity for his past crimes because he didn't actually testify in front of the grand jury. Instead, he disrupted the courthouse and tried to shoot people.
That's true. I didn't think about that. And Parker put the witness in McSweeten's trunk.
Yes, which is great. Because he opens it and there's like a bow on the witness's head and duct tape on his mouth. And Parker leaves him a sweet note that's like, this is a wanted fugitive. I'll hand him into federal custody. I don't want you to go back to Kansas. Aww.
Love.
What a sweet gesture.
I know.
What a weird, sweet gesture.
And he's like, I love this job.
I love this job.
And my notes, I wrote, he is a very lucky dum-dum.
He's a lucky dum-dum. So, yeah. So, now we've just got the money. We need to get the money for the guy who got beat up at the beginning. And also, Nate has to deal with the Italian.
Because, you need to reveal how he knows the account.
Yeah, what the codes are. Yes, he's playing Poirot.
I fucking love a denouement. But yeah, so they meet up in Vector's office, which has been wrecked. It has been turned upside down.
Totally ransacked.
And he says, like, the key is whenever Vector gets angry, he sees red. So he's used this color-coded encryption thing to unlock the numbers. So there's something.
Wait, before that, he's like, oh, you guys just needed me to get all of the dirty cops away from the office so you could ransack it. Like, yeah. This whole thing was just a ploy for you guys to try to find the money. And the Italian's like, yeah, but we can't find it. Like, we don't have it. Which he's is like, when he's like.
And he's like, well, I am better than you thought I was. So this color-coded encryption thing is really cool and makes no sense to me. Like,
no sense.
I'm a pretty intelligent person, but stuff like this blows my mind.
So when we saw very early on at the bar when Vector was drunk, that he has a picture of himself on his lock screen on his phone, but in it, his red uniform looks purple. And it's one of those moments where, like, it's a very weird scene, so it must be important later.
Yeah.
Where Parker takes his phone and is like, oh, you look like Barney, the dinosaur. And he's like, oh, the color's off on the photo. And Nate realizes that, like, the difference in value coding for the colors between the photo on his phone that's purple and the red of his actual uniform photo, like, that each color is assigned a number, and if you take the difference between the two numbers, then you get the code, which I was like, I'm not sure that I buy this as a thing that...
There, I was looking it up, because that's what, I was like, okay, maybe I can find, like, a YouTube video that will explain this in, like, children's terminology, and I couldn't find any that was, like, really understandable, but it is a thing.
Okay.
You can do. But yeah, there was... Because a lot of times, like, I'll look at things, and I'm like, oh, like, here's an easy how to encrypt using this.
Right.
But I couldn't find anything. So if somebody listening to this does find it, please let me know. That'd be really cool to but I need it in like the most layman of terms.
Tell us more about color photo cryptology.
Yeah. I need like a bling bling article about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, she says, you know, I'm going to use some of this money to pay back this guy's retirement funds, and then I'm going to use the rest of these accounts to go after Damien Moreau. And our deal is off. Like, it's just his like kick-ass ultimatum where he's like, right, our deal's off. Like, you have nothing to hold over me anymore. And I'm more of a man.
I'm more than you thought I was. And he leaves in a huff. And it's very sweet and wonderful, except that then the Italian is on the phone with somebody saying, like, it worked. He's going after Moreau without us. Our hands are clean. So, like, yeah, they played him like a fiddle, because they know exactly how he's going to behave because he's predictable.
Yes, which I love. In the commentary, they said, so she turns her back to the camera and you just see her silhouette. They weren't quite sure what the storyline was going to be from here.
Right.
So they had her have her back to the camera, and they had like two alternate things that she was going to say. So one of them was this one, obviously. And the other one was that she was working for Moreau.
Oh. So
like double, like triple cross kind of.
Right.
But I'm glad they did this instead. We go back and Sophie's sitting at the bar waiting for him, and she's worried. She thinks that the Italian deserves their wrath for like putting them all in this situation.
Yeah.
And that now if they go after Moreau, it's voluntary because they're not going after it to save Nate and the rest of them.
Right.
But then he like has this big, big damn hero speech, you know, we've never had a chance like this before. And if we can take him out before he does any more damage.
Right.
And then like, you know, the best line, we didn't choose this fight, but we're in it now. We should see it through. And she's like,
I'm into all of, yeah, I have the vapors.
She's like, I've never gotten the vapors over being moral.
Yeah.
But it's working for me. And then they like drink to victory, and she like throws her drink back, and Nate is like, and now I have the vapors.
Yeah.
He just threw back that shot like a champ.
They are perfect for each other.
They are. They're getting there. They're
mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not yet, but they will be someday.
Yeah. I love it. Okay, last thoughts about this episode.
So I thought that it did. This was like a really good example of when they do a really good balance of like a slightly convoluted con, like a convoluted just enough that you're like, yeah, right, I probably couldn't have thought of that, but not so convoluted that at the end of the episode, you're like, I have no idea what just happened.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a really good, because at every beat, I was like, okay, I understand why they're doing this and like what they're going to get out of it. Sometimes at the end of an episode, I'm like, I still don't understand why they did that. Like, I have to go back and watch it a couple times before I understand like what the point of the con was, or like how all the pieces fit together.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm not paying exact attention to the episode, like if anything happens, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. But this episode was a good, like at every beat, I was like, okay, yeah, I know why they're making this choice. And there was like good time with Hardison and Elliot being dumb together. And like, there was like a lot of funny Parker stuff. And there was like sweet moments with Nate and Sophie. Like there was good, it was really well balanced.
Mm-hmm. There was even like, you know, Parker and Hardison don't really have much interaction, but when he's like messing with the breakers to like trap her in the elevator with him, like he just is like, you and Agent McCute or something.
Yeah.
McSweetheart, I think is what they call them. And it's like not like jealous or anything. He just kind of says it and like they're in the middle of a job because she doesn't have feelings for him, but I'm just like, I like that too, because I think a tropey storyline there is like, I know you're just doing your job, but you know, you're flirting with this guy.
Right.
And they don't like, fall into that because
not at all.
That's not who they are.
Yeah.
Another one, another thought that I had was kind of in this, the background scene, or like the extras and the backgrounds and like the bar and in the airport. In the last episode was the first episode directed by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it was directed by a Black woman. And it was really evident in all of the scenes with extras, because it was it wasn't just white people in the background.
Right, yeah.
And then, like, noticing that, and then in this episode, it goes back to all white people.
Yeah.
Just like, wow. Like, imagine the world that we could depict if we were more aware of this. This unconscious bias we have.
Right.
I say we as if I work in casting. We're in Portland, Oregon.
But hopefully also if you worked in casting, you would be like, there are people of color in Seattle.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not that many, because Seattle's pretty white, but like Portland, yeah.
So that made me a little sad when they're, and yeah. I just noticed when like Elliot's, you know, bashing the guy's head in the bar. I'm like, white person.
Yeah.
But other than that, I really love this episode. I think it's great.
It's really good, yeah.
Ben Parker with the blue lipstick is wonderful.
It's really good.
Do you have any heist flights?
So yes, I have been reading some long form articles. So there was a recent, I want to say New Yorker article about this guy who gets conned by this lesbian couple. The one gets pregnant and like says it's his baby, but he won't get it tested. And like he moves them both into his family home with like his wife and kids. And then
ex-wife, right? Like they're separated.
Divorced legally, but they're still in a relationship with each other, I think, okay. Or they're remarried. Anyway, I think they like got divorced, got back together, and just never legally remarried. Okay. So anyway, is my impression. His version of it is that their marriage is a lot more open than her version of it is. But like in any case, like impregnating a woman and then having her move in to our house was not like in anybody's open marriage agreement, probably. Maybe. I mean, you do you. It wasn't in theirs, for sure. And so they're like go out of town for the weekend or something, and they come back and all their furniture's gone. Like the women have moved all the furniture like out of the family house and into their apartment. And at this point, like, he's still trying to make, like, a co-parenting agreement work with these women. And it's, like, no, I mean, it's, the article is very good. The reporter went through and talked to other men who these women had tried to run the same scam on.
Mm-hmm.
And who had varying degrees of, like, response to it. Between like this is very weird and I never want to talk to you again to like I went out with her a couple of times and slept with her, but as soon as like I heard she was pregnant, I made her get a paternity test, like varying degrees of like probably not. And then this guy who's just like, and then they stole my furniture and I still had them over for Christmas dinner, and you're like, I don't. Anyway, the women are
like,
not
like a Ivy League professor, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He teaches like decision making at Yale or Harvard or something. Yeah. So it's not great. He's been suspended from teaching, which is probably for the best, honestly.
Yeah.
But the best part about it is because the girl who runs the heist like is this daughter of like a famous musician. So like, she's not like hard up for money. Like neither of them needs money. They're not running the con because they like want to actually like get money from people at the end. They were just like, we hate men. So we screw them over and take stuff from them.
That's wild. That is just wild.
It's like, cool. I mean,
we weren't doing anything else at the moment, and so I just thought,
I also hate
info, and
I mean, I Anyway, wow. Yeah. Also, just like, I mean, obviously, I hope that like the child or children who were involved out of this, like, got, I don't know, some kind of care. That's,
yeah,
of course. Because it really sucks to use kids in your con. But also, I don't think anyone still knows who the father of that baby is. And they just con people, men, because they hate them. And they con them by, like, the woman who's, like, the main con artist. I don't know. Her, I think it's her girlfriend or best friend, or, like, it's unclear to me. I think that they are romantically involved. But the woman who goes around and sleeps with them, her girlfriend is trans, so she can't get pregnant. Mm-hmm. So she, like, runs the pregnancy side of the con, right? And what she does is, like, walks up to men at, like, crosswalks and the grocery store and says, "I find you very attractive." And they just, like, fall for it. They're just like, "Oh, great, let's go have sex."
Yeah. Cool, you want to get out of here?
Yeah.
She has a French accent. She's sort of like, yeah, no, it's, anyway, it's extremely wild. And I was like, this is not your average con.
No. Which that kind of segues into, so my high slide is just some movie reviews.
Yeah.
Because over the past couple of weeks I saw Hustlers and The Hustle.
Nice. I did not realize they were two separate films. So yay.
Separate, very different, but not at the same time, movies, you know, but all about like using men's weaknesses against them.
Yeah.
And the way that they treat women against them. So Hustlers is the based on a true story. So yeah, and Constance Wu and Lizzo and
like all star cast here.
Yeah. Cardi B's in it. Freaking Julia Stiles is in it.
I miss Julia Stiles.
She has like not a huge part in this, but it's kind of told like Julia Stiles is a reporter or a journalist and she's interviewing Constance Wu sort of in the present, and then it's flashing back to her time as a stripper, and she becomes friends with J-Lo's character, and everything's great for a while. They work near Wall Street, and then she like has a boyfriend and gets pregnant, and so she like leaves, and when she comes back, when her boyfriend leaves her, she kicks him out. It's been after the market has crashed, after the
house
first, and the crisis and everything. So it's a completely different world. Like all of the women that she worked with before are gone. It's all these like Russian women who are like giving blowjobs in the back room, and and it's just not the same environment. But then she like meets back up with J-Lo's character and they like reconnect, and she has a new sideline hustle going where they go fishing and they go to a bar and they meet one guy who's like a stockbroker or something, and they drug him a lot sometimes. And then they bring him back to the club where they have a deal with the bar, and they just max out his credit card. And he is just messed up on drugs.
Yeah.
MDMA and something else. And then he doesn't remember anything that happened.
Right.
And they get a hefty cut of all the money they charge to the bar.
Okay.
And it's like almost foolproof because none of these guys are going to go, "Oh, I was taken advantage of by these strippers."
Right.
And then, of course, like, all of this wonderful stuff that happens to them. But it's not, like, I saw it with some of my best friends, and we were leaving, and I was like, it was a lot funnier than I thought it was going to be. Because I was like, I knew it was based on a true story. I knew that it was going to end, like, super happily, but it kind of ended on like a little bit of a high note. My best friend's like, "I thought it was going to be funny." But it's great. Like there's a scene where Usher shows up and like all the people are dancing. There's I mean, Lizzo's there, like working.
Yeah.
So great. When you first see J-Lo, she comes on and does an entire number, and her pole dance is to Criminal by Fiona Apple.
I saw that, yeah, on Twitter. It's such a, like, it's such a 90s, like.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I was like, I would never have been like, that's a good song to pole dance.
Right,
like.
Right.
And yeah, and they're like other little cameos. So Jack the stripper is, she's a stripper and she's a writer and artist that I follow on Twitter, and she's on it. And I'm like, I like turned to my best friend, I'm like, that's Jack the stripper. What?
Okay.
Yeah, she's like, you know, a school director and doesn't follow strippers.
Right, right, right.
So that I enjoyed it. And then there were some parts that I would have edited down. There were scenes that were longer than they needed to be. But then The Hustle is completely other end. It was funny. I watched it with my sisters in the middle of the night when we're having a girls' night. So it was a good movie to like talk through and then like look over and be like, oh my gosh, yes. It's almost time for you to go. But before we wrap up, I wanted to give a shout out to Christina on Twitter, who tweeted at me to ask if it, to say it might sound creepy, but if we ever did want to go to Portland to visit Leverage sites, that we could stay with her, which was a little creepy, but was very sweet.
It was very sweet.
And I talked to a bunch of the co-hosts, and I decided, blanket for everybody, that if we do that, we all have to go together.
Yeah.
Because it can't just be me and one other person. We gotta take the whole gang. And I'd love to do that to when we like wrap up the very end of the series, kind of to end it with the bang. Go to Portland and try to visit locations, which I think they've been mapped somewhere. Corey, tell people how they can find you on the internet.
Mm-hmm. I am at Helen's Twin on Twitter, HelenStwin. Helen's Twin. And that is the best way to find me. I am a locked account, but if you ask to follow me, I will probably let you. If you don't seem like a creepy bot.
You won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks. We're going to be talking about the ho-ho-ho job. Bye-bye-bye.